What an encouraging way to start our time together here today. And we do commend Mike for his courage and his statement. And it takes a lot of nerve to do that and a lot of conviction to do the right thing. We commend Mike and Robert for supporting him and for helping him understand that and standing beside him, the things that they have said. I have the privilege of meeting with these three men pretty often, and I want to tell you, they love the Lord and they love this church. And I've said before, being an elder is a really, really hard job. It just is. But it is particularly a challenge to be the first elders of a new congregation, because you're plowing new ground every day. And everything that comes up, there's no processes that have been in place. There's no precedents to fall back on. Everything has to be figured out for the first time and try to be figured out in the very best way possible. And they spend a lot of time with that, a lot of effort in that, and a lot of prayer for this church. And we commend them for that. We hear the word deal a whole lot. People say today, they'll say, you ought to buy this. It's a good deal. And when you go back through history, the history of our nation, and you really look at it, the word deal, it's had a very special meaning. President Theodore Roosevelt, when he became president, he offered to the nation a square deal. Now, later on, to be a square was not necessarily a good thing. To be a square is to be out of date. But at his time in history, when he was going into the White House, a square deal was a good thing. It was a good thing to do. Years later, when the nation experienced the Deep Depression, it was a very tough time. Men couldn't get jobs, couldn't support their families. It was a terrible time. Another President Roosevelt came to the White House. And Franklin D. Roosevelt said, I want to offer you a new deal. A new deal. Like when you're sitting with friends playing cards, perhaps, and they deal out the cards, and you pick yours up, and you look at them, and you say, this is a terrible hand. This is a sorry hand. Deal them again. I want a new hand, a new deal. Shuffle again. Then Harry Truman came to the White House. And Harry Truman, when he took over as president, he offered the nation a fair deal. A fair deal. He said every man, every person just needs a fair chance at the great dream of America. But the word deal was a very important word through history. But the word deal has been more than just political. The word deal has really kind of been a verbal shorthand, if you please, that we have in our conversations. Two people are talking. One says, I'd like to buy this product that you're selling here, and this is how much I'll give for your product. The other one says, no way. I'm not going to sell it for that amount of money. It takes more. So you say, well, I'll come up $100. He says, well, I'll come down 100. You say, that's still not good enough. It's got to be more. It's going to have to be at least $50 more that you're going to come down. And you go back and forth and back and forth until somebody finally says, it's a deal. It's a deal. I'll buy it. Sometimes we even use the word as a derision. Someone says, this is what I've done. These are the things that I've accomplished. And we sit back and we say, big deal. Big deal. I'm not so much impressed. It's not that big of a thing. You're not so much. Have you ever realized how many deals God has offered His people? How many deals of God, all of the deals of God? Oh, we don't call them deals, but if you think about them a moment, that's exactly what they are. God offered a lot of patriarchal deals in the third chapter of Genesis. In essence, God said to Adam and Eve, He said, you can live in this garden paradise. You can have peace and tranquility. You can have the close companionship that comes by being in the very presence of the Creator of the universe. And all you got to do is don't eat of the tree of the knowledge of good and evil that's in the middle of the garden. Don't do that. And if you'll just not do that, then we got a deal. Adam and Eve said, no deal. No deal. We would prefer to be free. We would prefer to do as we want to do. We would prefer to be able to sin if we want to. And so they rejected the deal. And they were cast out of the garden. The deal was off. Same time Noah, beginning with Genesis chapter 6. Noah came out of an ark after the world had been absolutely destroyed. Destroyed by water. God said, Noah, I want to make a deal with you. He said, look up there in the sky. I said, you see that bow that I put in the sky? See that multicolored symbol? That is my promise to you that I will never again destroy the world with water. He said, the reason I did it the first time was because they became wicked in their hearts and every imagination was evil continually. But I'm saying to you, I'm telling you, Noah, I'm making you a promise. I'm offering you a deal. And that is, if you will obey me, I will never destroy the world by water again. And he said, and along with that deal, I'll give you stability. Eighth chapter of Genesis says, you'll have seed time, harvest time, summertime, wintertime, cold, heat, day, night. You're going to have stability in the world. And they thought, that's a pretty good deal. Abraham came along. Wonderful story of a man and a woman, but a tragic story in the beginning. They came to the age of 90 and 100, and they had no children, no heirs. Life doesn't hold much promise for the future. When we die, we die. That's it. God said, let me tell you, I'm going to make you a promise. If you will believe me, if you will follow me, if you will obey me, then I will give you a child. And furthermore, he said, it'll be more than just a child. I'm going to actually give you all of this land that you see, all of this land that you're walking on. It's yours. It's the promised land. At the same time, he said, this son that's coming, this son will give you seed. Seed that will fill the earth. Like the sands of the seashore, like the stars in the sky, and it will all be yours. That's the deal. And it was a good one. And Abraham, the scripture says, believed God and it was reckoned to him for righteousness. He accepted the deal. Now those are patriarchal deals. There was a bigger one coming. The bigger one came through Moses, and it seemed in many ways to be the culmination of so many things that God had promised, except it was better. It wasn't as disorganized. It wasn't as open-ended. God came and said, here are 10 cardinal principles that I will send down the mountain by Moses' hand. And these 10 cardinal principles will rule your life. They are ideal. And of course, Moses didn't even get down off the mountain and get the stone dust washed from his hands until they had broken them. They had broken them. In addition to the 10, God says, here's 603 more. 603 that will cover your whole life. The civil, the criminal, the liability, everything. He says, it's for you. It's for a nation of people. It's a wonderful deal, God said, that I'm offering you. If you will be my people, I will be your God. Now, Jesus said, when the scribe asked him, Matthew chapter 22, he said, which one's the greatest commandment? What's the top one? Jesus said, there's not a top one, there's top two. Matthew 22, verse 37, he said, you love God. That's number one. And point number two, he said, you love your neighbors as you love yourself. But God told Moses, he said, I'm giving you this law. And the law doesn't leave a whole lot to chance. It's specific. There's 613 commandments. It's specific. It's stipulated. This is what you will do. This is what you will not do. And the law was perfect. It's what Paul said. Romans chapter 7, Paul said the law is perfect, not anything wrong with it. Had everything just right, every I dotted, every T crossed. Paul said the only problem with the law was perfect, but I'm not, Paul said. I can't keep it. I can't do it. It was a wonderful deal, but nobody could live perfectly. So it still wasn't the best deal. Even though the Mosaic law was a good deal, it wasn't the best deal. Finally, the best deal is talked about, prophesied, predicted. You heard Steve read it a moment ago, Jeremiah 31, beginning with verse 31. Jeremiah talking to the future, 600 years before Jesus Christ. 6 centuries earlier. Here's what he said. The day is going to come when God is going to make a new covenant, and I'd insert deal with you. He's going to give you a new deal. And it's not going to be like the one you got coming out of Egypt, the one you broke. The one you couldn't keep. It's not going to be something you misunderstand. That you do all the jots and all the tittles and the exact things and think you're okay. He says, not going to be like that at all. No, instead, he said, it's going to be totally different. This new covenant deal that I'm offering, you'll no more say, know the Lord. Because he said, everyone shall know me. From the least to the greatest. God said through Jeremiah, if you're in the kingdom, if you're into God's things, you will know these things. It's a mind thing. You know, it's so popular today and has been for a good many years now that sometimes people get the idea, Let's reach out and let's invite the unchurched in, which I think is a terribly derogatory term, really, when you get down to it. But let's invite the unchurched in. And let's don't require much of them. Let's just tell them you come in and maybe you go through the motions of some things and you look like a child of God. Maybe you feel like you are, but you don't pay much attention to what God says you need to do or what you need to be, because we're going to accept you just like you are. Now the questions ask, well, when are you going to tell them what God wants them to do? They say, well, we're going to get around to it. We're going to tell them. And quite honestly, I've listened to these people say that even among our brethren. Even among our fellowship. I've heard them say that for years and they hadn't told anyone yet. They've never gotten around to go to that Saturday night group that they call the unchurched and explain it to them yet. They've never gone in and said, this is what you must do, what God tells you to do. You got to be this kind of a person. This is what you must be and understand. This is the way of life. But God, through Jeremiah, said, you don't have to worry about that. He said, they're not going to get in as babies. They're not coming into the covenant by circumcision and something like that and then grow up to find out what it is. God said, every one of them will know me. If they are in the kingdom, they'll know me. And they'll know what I want, and they'll know what I demand. That's the covenant. That's the deal. Second thing the prophet Jeremiah said, looking through 6 centuries, he spoke the words of God and said, when that day comes, they'll not only know me, they'll have everything written in their hearts. Everything I want. 2 Corinthians 3 says that Moses came down from the mountain, and when Moses came down from the mountain, he brought down the commandments of God on 2 tables or 2 tablets of stone. But Paul said that was written on tablets of stone, but God is going to write it on our hearts now. It's not going to be one of those things where you pretend to be. He says it's going to be written on your heart. It's going to penetrate your emotion. That's why later when Jesus arrives on the scene and in the Sermon on the Mount, he tells the people, you've heard it said of old, referring back to the law, you ought not to commit adultery. He said, I'm telling you, I don't want you to have lust in your heart. You've heard it said, yeah, you ought not to kill or ought not to murder. He said, I'm telling you, you ought not to have any hate originating in your heart. Paul says that was the deal. God says that's the deal. It'll be written on your heart and it will penetrate your emotions. You won't have to say, I've done everything you said. I've lived up to the letter of the law. I'm okay. He said, now you better look into the heart. Look into it. For this covenant deal, it includes not just what you know, not just what you do, but it includes how you do it and why you do it. And then Jeremiah records the third part, which is the most interesting part. He said it won't be like it used to be. But this day is going to come with the ushering in of a new age, and God is going to remember our sins no more. Forever. No more. Book of Hebrews, we've been looking at on Sunday mornings, it says every year a remembrance was made of all the things that people had done, and God remembered them on that day. But God, through Jeremiah, is saying in this wonderful new covenant, he is so gracious and loving, and when our response to him is good, then he forgives us, and he lays it away, and he thinks no more of it. Isn't that a blessing? He thinks no more of it, and you and he can come together again. What is it? What is it that makes this deal so great? Well, it's all of those things. It's the best deal that God ever offered, and it's a one-time opportunity. Not going to be another one. Says this is the last one. If you respond to me the way Abraham responded to me, God says, if you accept my covenant offer as Abraham accepted his, then all of these blessings are yours. All of them. Jesus died on a cross to clinch the deal. He's the one who closed the deal. There had to be a sacrifice offered. But not just any sacrifice. It had to be worthy. It had to more than balance the sins of the world on the other side of the scale. And Jesus did that. And then he said, all you have to do is turn towards me. Know what God's will is. And from the heart, obey it. You see, when you're baptized into Christ, it's a heart answer. It's not an external mechanical thing, as some try to dilute the importance of it and say that it is. It's a heart thing. It's the answer of a good conscience toward God, is what Peter says. It's a good deal. It's a good deal. In the closing days of World War II, the Nazis in Poland, they had an extermination camp known as Auschwitz. And in Auschwitz, they were killing Jews every day in the gas chamber. Thousands of them they were putting to death. And they didn't want anyone escaping from the camp. But one man escaped. And since that one man escaped, they said, what we're going to do is we're going to pick 10 people to die in his place. But they're not going to die in the gas chamber. Not going to have a bullet to the head. We're going to put these 10 people in a room and we're going to not give them any food. We're not going to give them any water to drink. Nothing to eat, nothing to drink, and we're going to let them starve to death. So they selected the 10 people. At random, they just went through and they picked 10 people and they came to one man. And when they picked him, he said, oh, no, 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 no. My wife, my children, they're here. What will they do? How will they survive? There was a man there by the name of Maximilian Kolbe. Maximilian Kolbe stepped forward. And he said, I'll take his place. I'll die for him. He's got family here. I'll go and be starved to death for him. And for some reason, they allowed it. So they put Maximilian Kolbe in a room with 9 other people. And amidst the screams of agony, and fear and pain. After 2 weeks, everybody was dead except one person, Maximilian Kolbe. So they went inside the room and they injected his veins with a poison to kill him. And he died. But the man he took the place of actually survived. And he got out of the concentration camp. And he set up his home and he had his family. And he continued to live with his family. Would it surprise you to know that in his house there was a little memorial to Maximilian Kolbe? The man who took his place and died for him an agonizing death. You say, that's impressive, and it is. But let me tell you, it's not even close to what Jesus did for you and me. And his question today is, deal or no deal? We'll know this morning while we stand and while we sing.